headlines, Western states pledge to send more artillery to Ukraine as Russia starts a new phase of its operation. Boris Johnson apologizes to MPs after becoming UK's first prime minister to be fined for breaking the law. And Israeli forces attack Palestinians protesting against the occupation of their land, leaving dozens wounded. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gizumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. The latest from the Russian military operation in Ukraine. Moscow has announced a new ceasefire around a steel plant in Mariupol, the key remaining Ukrainian stronghold in the port city. Russia's defense ministry says Ukrainian soldiers holed up in the factory should lay down their arms on Wednesday. Moscow had offered a similar proposal, but to no avail. Russia says nationalist forces and foreign mercenaries there will be guaranteed survival if they surrender. Ukrainian officials say there are civilians inside the plant, and a presidential advisor has claimed Russia is hitting the plant with blockbuster bombs. The port of Mariupol has seen the heaviest fighting to date since Russia began its campaign on the 24th of February. In the meantime, the U.S., Britain, and Canada have pledged more artillery assistance to Ukraine. The U.S. Defense Department says Ukraine's partners have provided the country with additional aircraft as well as spare parts to put the damaged planes back to action.
I would just say, without getting into what other nations are providing, that they have received additional platforms and parts to be able to increase their fleet size, their aircraft fleet size. I think I'd leave it at that.
The spokesman did not name the countries that provided the aircraft, but said that the United States was not among them. Washington has announced plans to give Ukraine Russian-made helicopters that had once been intended for Afghanistan. Russia is advancing its across the entire stretch of Ukraine's eastern front in this operation. The European official has said up to 20,000 mercenaries from Russian private security companies, as well as in Syria and Libya, are fighting alongside Russian forces. Ukraine says its forces are there to withstand Russian assaults. Scott Bennett is a former psychological warfare officer at the U.S. Army. We asked him about his assessment of the course of war in Ukraine.
We're at the last stage of this battle in Mariupol, where I think the West is hiding a variety of biological chemical weapons in Mariupol. That's why they are fighting so fanatically. Russia recognizes this. Russia also recognizes that it was a United States missile shot by American forces that took out, most likely, the Russian destroyer and may have led to the poisoning of the Black Sea with nuclear toxic waste as a result of that act of war that the United States engaged in against Russia. So I think Russia is showing a great deal of patience, but at the same time prosecuting this war with a balance of information operations and public affairs. They're not pounding Ukraine to dust. They are choosing their targets very wisely. They are trying to save civilian lives. But of course, the right-wing Nazi Asimov battalions and the Israeli mercenaries that are there are desperately trying to use the indigenous people of Mariupol and Ukraine as human shields. And it's because of that reckless suicide that much of Ukraine is being destroyed.
Security experts warn a move by EU nations and Finland and Sweden to join NATO could potentially trigger a new world war. Governments in Helsinki and Stockholm say that their decisions to whether join the alliance will be made within weeks. Jerome Hughes reports.
There are many security experts who claim the expansion of NATO in recent years close to Russia's borders and provocative military exercises are factors that brought about the conflict in Ukraine. Now EU members Finland and Sweden are poised to announce they want to join NATO. One analyst has been giving us his reaction via broadband.
That's a very serious escalation toward Russia, because this is when the United States will put nuclear bombs in Finland, and that would mean a direct escalation that Russia will not accept.
Finland shares a border with Russia that is more than 1,300 kilometres long. Moscow points out that if this country was to join the 30-nation alliance, NATO's land border with the Russian Federation would more than double in length. A new opinion poll by Le Soir newspaper has found that 90% of citizens surveyed in Belgium said the war worries them, but that they do not support direct military intervention over concerns that it could trigger a new world war. A quarter of those questioned said the West's supply of weapons to fighters in Ukraine is, quote, a bad thing. We have also been asking members of the public about this.
Yeah, I think we should stop doing that, huh? Because war... fights war and then ends up in more war. So it's more about like discussing, talking.
It's a very good thing to have a dialogue with Russians and hopefully sort this out without war.
Ideally, diplomacy is the way that this comes to an end, but it takes two sides. From what I'm reading, they don't want to negotiate at all yet.
On Tuesday, the European Commission defended the decisions taken by EU governments to send arms to Ukraine.
In this case, more weapons doesn't mean more war. More weapons for Ukraine means more ability for the Ukrainian army to defend its people.
As concerns over possible escalation continue to increase, Finland and Sweden are expected to announce, before the end of this month, if they intend to join NATO. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Russia announces a decision to expel 31 European diplomats in a tit-for-tat move. The Russian Foreign Ministry says it has cleared 15 Dutch diplomats persona non grata and given them 2 weeks to leave. 12 Belgian diplomats have also been asked to leave. Moscow has yet to respond to moves by Germany and France to withdraw 40 of their envoys to Russia, which means more European diplomats are likely to be sent home. This amid a war of words between Moscow and the West. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz says Washington's Russian President Vladimir Putin is responsible for, quote, war crimes in Ukraine. Russia denies the allegation, calling it a propaganda tactic in a smear campaign. Meanwhile, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has censored Russia's new offensive in eastern Ukraine and called for a 4-day ceasefire to mark the Orthodox Holy Week. Britain's Prime Minister Boris Johnson has apologized to Parliament as he has become the first British leader to be fined for breaking the law in the so-called Partygate scandal.
And I offer the British people a full apology. And I take this opportunity on the first available sitting day to repeat my wholehearted apology to the House. As soon as I received the notice, I acknowledged the hurt and the anger. And I said that people had a right to expect better of their Prime Minister. And I repeat that, Mr. Speaker, again in the House now.
Despite his apology, however, Johnson claimed that he did not know at the time that the parties were breaching the law. The penalty was announced last week by the police, which are investigating a dozen gatherings held at Johnson's office and residence during the 2020 and 21 coronavirus lockdown periods. Johnson would first deny any such events, but later admitted to the parties. The opposition parties say Johnson repeatedly lied to the public. In the Parliament session, Labour Party leader Keir Starmer labelled Johnson a man without shame. British Prime Minister has been hit by a series of controversies. He has also made missteps in the past 6 months. Al-Aqsa Mosque was once again the scene of Israeli forces assaulting Palestinian worshippers. This time around, there weren't as many injuries as days ago, but the continuing desecration of Islam's third holiest site in Al-Quds by the Israeli regime raises the specter of yet another war on Gaza, something that happened during the holy month of Ramadan last year.
Just days ago, Israeli occupation forces attacked Al-Quds' Al-Aqsa Mosque, wounding more than 150 Palestinians while it was filled with Ramadan worshippers on one of the holiest days in the Islamic calendar. Now, in a fresh bout of violence, Israeli forces have again targeted Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Dozens of Israeli military forces have stormed into the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied old city of Al-Quds and restricted the entry of Palestinian worshippers into the Flashpoint holy site to secure the incursion of hundreds of extremist settlers to mark the Passover holiday. This is while the day before, the settlers entered the compound amid a heavy military deployment of Israeli soldiers to mark the Passover holiday and perform their own prayers. This year, the Jewish religious occasion coincides with the Muslim fasting month of Ramadan at a time when thousands of Muslims, predominantly Palestinians, usually stay at the holy site for worship, a rare convergence that will drive unusually high numbers of Jewish, Muslim, and Christian worshippers to the old city of Al-Quds. Far-right Jewish groups have even called for raids of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound during the Jewish Passover holiday and the offering of animal sacrifices in its courtyards, which has not occurred since ancient times. Sacred to Muslims and revered by Jews, the Al-Aqsa Mosque, Islam's third holiest site, has long been a flashpoint in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
And it's really pushing the Palestinians out of Jerusalem. It's trying to Judaize the city of Jerusalem. And we saw them attacking completely innocent people, you know, old people, women, children. So it's not really about security for Jewish worshippers.
Palestinians have plenty of reasons to be angry, including Israel's restrictions for them to pray at Al-Aqsa and the regime's occupation and crimes, as well as its attempts to Judaize Al-Quds. People in the occupied territories are also very angry over the inaction of a Palestinian leadership, namely the PA and the normalization of ties between some Arab states and Israel.
Palestinians in the occupied territories have reacted to the raids by the Israeli security forces by going out to the streets in support of the worshippers. Israel, meanwhile, is trying to paint a different narrative. The Western-backed media is hard at work painting the Palestinians as the aggressors, even calling the worshippers rioters and terrorists. Israel says its so-called security operation is an effort to protect freedom of worship from violent rioters desecrating the site and endangering the public, but it has a tough task since scores of videos show the opposite to be the case. Palestinians are angry on a wide variety of fronts. They are suffering immensely due to the Israeli occupation. Additionally, they are amazed at the international community's indifference to the Palestinian suffering amid the Ukraine crisis. Furthermore, the paralysis of the Palestinian leadership has added salt to their wounds, who seems unable to do anything. The resistance group Hamas, however, has described the crisis as the continuing terrorism of the occupation and its crimes, attempts to Judaize Al-Quds and to perform sacrifices in the Al-Aqsa Mosque to build its so-called temple during what they call Passover. The Gaza Strip, meanwhile, is at risk of another Israeli onslaught. Israeli tanks and armored vehicles have made an incursion into northern Gaza Strip, raising the possibility of another war.
Governments around the world need to stop supporting the Israeli aggressions against the Palestinians. And I can say myself, as a rabbi and as a Jewish person, the Jewish communities around the world have to stop supporting the Israeli aggression against the Palestinians.
A similar Israeli assault on Al-Aqsa during Ramadan last year sparked a military confrontation between resistance factions in Gaza, led by Hamas and Israel. Hamas has said this year Israel's assault on the Al-Aqsa and its worshippers is a declaration of war. And sure enough, early on Tuesday, the Gaza Strip came under Israeli assault, reportedly after rocket fire from the Gaza Strip. This is a sure sign that another war may be in the making.
China says it firmly rejects U.S. allegations against Beijing on its armed control and non-proliferation policies.
What the U.S. has done gravely undermines global strategic balance and stability and impedes the international arms control and disarmament process, and therefore has been widely condemned by the international community. However, instead of reflecting upon itself, the U.S. keeps slinging mud at other countries in a bid to create excuses for freeing itself from its bound obligations and scapegoat others.
The foreign ministry spokesman further accused Washington of having a deplorable track record in compliance with arms control and non-proliferation agreements and commitments. He cited Washington's withdrawal from many treaties, such as the INF and the Open Skies with Russia, as well as its flip-flopping on the 2015 Iran deal. China's reactions come in response to the U.S. State Department's yearly report on compliance with arms control, non-proliferation, and disarmament. The report accuses China of failing to comply with its commitments.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
UK's Tory MPs say fines for Prime Minister Boris Johnson and Chancellor of Exchequer Rishi Sunak over lockdown gatherings have led usually loyal supporters to express concern. In this regard, we have prepared for you an article written jointly by Michael Savage and Mark Townsend titled "Senior Conservatives Fear UK's Traditional Voters Will Desert Them After Partygate." Please stay with us to hear more about the details. Senior Tories have warned that traditional supporters are abandoning them after Boris Johnson's Partygate fine, as another MP broke cover to say the Prime Minister should be removed over his conduct. Conservative MPs across the country said on Saturday, April 16th, they believed many people who had backed the party before were now raising concerns, with Downing Street braced for further fixed penalty notices relating to parties in the coming days. Writing in The Observer, former Immigration Minister Caroline Noakes said she was sticking with her decision to submit a letter of no confidence in the Prime Minister. It makes her the latest MP to back a leadership contest since the lockdown breach fines were issued to the Prime Minister and the Chancellor Rishi Sunak. She also highlighted correspondents struggling previously secure voters were expressing concerns. She wrote, "There are those who say these emails are only from the usual suspects. It is true to say there have been a smattering of them. The political activist who sent an automated email at a drop of a hat, but they are very much in the minority." She said, "The bulk of the emails I received recently are from people who are genuinely distressed at the family events they could not and did not attend. And many are from people I know who have long been conservative supporters," adding, "I have not withdrawn the letter of no confidence in Boris Johnson that I wrote months ago to Sir Graham Brady, the chair of the Tory backbench 1922 committee, because to do so would be letting down all of those people who spent the pandemic doing the right thing." Another Tory MPs, including serving ministers, said they believed some sections of their voters were being alienated. A number of them said that the party was trying so hard to hold on to newer pro-Brexit voters that many traditional supporters were being put off by Partygate and by the government's plan to send asylum seekers to Rwanda. One Northern Tory MP said, "If you go to our newer working class, blue-collar voters, I'm not sure they're that bothered," adding, "But if you go to our traditional middle-class Tory voter, they are angry. That's how I would define it. I think he should have resigned." A minister said, "We are going down a route that isolates people in the middle. I don't know whether there is enough votes on the right and the core of the party to get us through. I just think it's offensive and it's doing real brand damage. I'm just appalled." One former minister said, "There is a couple of what I call barometer people have come to me and said, 'Look, we're still angry with him. We don't think he should resign at the moment because we've got the Ukraine crisis, but he shouldn't lead us into the next election.' These are people who I know are conservative supporters." The news comes with Tory MPs demanding further contrition from Johnson when he meets them after Parliament returns in the coming week. He has pledged to give a fuller explanation for his earlier denial that parties had taken place. There are also likely to be demands this week for a vote on referring the Prime Minister to the Cross-Party Privileges Committee over whether he misled MPs about downing strict lockdown parties. Labour has called Johnson's involvement in the Partygate saga indefensible after further allegations emerged about the Prime Minister's conduct. The Sunday Mirror said Number 10 had refused to answer questions about the birthday gathering submitted through a Freedom of Information request because of national security reasons. Labour's deputy leader, Angela Rayner, said, "While the British public was making huge sacrifices, Boris Johnson was breaking the law," adding, "He has deliberately misled the British people at every turn. The Prime Minister has demeaned his office. The British people deserve better." Some MPs critical of Johnson believe they have only a few months to decide whether he is the right person to lead them into the next election. An MP said, "As a party, we have to make a decision about Boris by summer recess," adding, "If we haven't done it by then, Boris will lead us into the next general election." The The Labour leader Keir Starmer called on Tory MPs to remove Johnson. He said he's unfit for office and every day he remains in Downing Street degrades his office further, adding, "The cabinet, ministers and Tory MPs must realise this is not going to change, and every time they defend Boris Johnson, they embroil themselves in his web of lies." Keir Starmer asked, "Are they really prepared to stand by and do nothing as his behaviour brings their party into disrepute? Only Conservative MPs have the power to bring this shameful saga to a close. If the Prime Minister is not going to resign, then they must take action when Parliament returns this week to send a clear message that honesty and integrity in public life still matters." A new opinion poll for The Observer suggests that the fines for Johnson and Sunak have had a more immediate impact on the Chancellor's popularity, which has hit a record low. The proportion of voters approving of the Chancellor was 24%, with 49% disapproving. His net approval rating of 25 is his lowest ever. Johnson remains on a net approval rating of 26. The Metropolitan Police are also coming under growing pressure to explain their approach and the timing of their decision to fine senior politicians for breaches of lockdown regulations. Onme Desai, a Labour member of the Greater London Authority's Police and Crime Committee, said he and colleagues were concerned that the Met had chosen to reveal the recent politically explosive Partygate findings at a time Parliament was not sitting. Desai, a former chair of the committee that examines the work of the Mayor's Office for Policing and Crime, which in turn oversees the Met, said the timing and the manner of the announcement raise more questions than answers. Desai also wanted to know why a drip-feed policy on the force's fining decision had been adopted by the Met, a strategy he said had no precedent. He said the committee would be asking Sir Stephen House, the acting head of the Met, until a new commissioner is appointed. Why the force had decided to release findings of the investigation in a piecemeal way.
Food for thought.
Salam, dear friends, and today, on the 17th of Ramadan, the day when the Muslims emerged victorious in the first ever armed encounter imposed by the Arab infidels on Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, let us present to you a wise statement from the hero of the Battle of Badr, the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali, peace upon him, to his elder son and successor, Imam Hassan, peace upon him. "Do not call to combat, but respond if you are called to it. For the provocateur is an oppressor, and an oppressor is to be fueled."
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
وَقَضَى رَبُّكَ أَلَّا تَعْبُدُوا إِلَّا إِيَّاهُ وَبِالْوَالِدَيْنِ إِحْسَانًا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وبهي نستعين. Welcome, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program For Humanity, and the topic today is Hollywood, Conditioning of the Subconscious Mind and Extermination of Human Rights. This is Sheikh Ali Hemani from Qom. So when we talk about extermination of human rights, we're talking about the free will of human beings. And so far, we discussed about Milgram's experiment and how the findings of this experiment is being used by the corporate world, is being used by the politicians, is being used by the media to influence us and control our free will. So we were talking about one of the techniques that is followed by the corporate world is that they say, follow the one you like. And based on this very message, they introduce the influencers, and these influencers tell us what to behave, how to behave, what to pick, what not to pick, way to go, way not to go, what coffee to drink, what coffee not to drink. And they are being paid by the corporate world to tell us what to choose and what not to choose. So it's the corporate world that tells the influencers the messages that are required to be delivered to the people, the messages that are required to be dictated to the people. And these influencers are the celebrities of today's world. If you look at Logan Paul, you know, he was the number two guy on YouTube, making the most money and the most getting the most number of subscribers, right? He was called for a conference where he was meeting his followers, you know, huge gathering of hundreds and thousands of people. And right in the middle of this conference, he makes a statement. He makes a declaration. He says, for next 1 month, I'm going to try and be gay. I'm going to try and be homosexual, right? With this single message, I don't know whether he tried or not, but with this single message, all those people who were standing on the borderline deciding whether they should come out, tell their parents, tell their friends that they are not straight, they're gay, they all had the courage to come out and declare. And all of a sudden, the number of people indulging into gay practices increased. Why? Because one influencer decided to experiment this behavior, not even come out and say that I'm gay, just experiment this behavior. And this gave courage for so many others to come out and declare that they are gay. And this is what I'm talking about, that the corporate world pays them, tells them, and defines for them what needs to be communicated. And they also define for us that who do we need to follow? Which influencer do we need to follow? And that's why you see that these are the guys who are controlling our free will and controlling our choices. And the media and the corporate world is the one that tells us who to follow. It could be Transformers, it could be Mickey Mouse, it could be Avengers or Batman or Spider-Man. Even Sherlock Holmes, all right? Or they might even tell us to pick one of the singers. They might say, follow Katy Perry, you know, because, or Ed Sheeran, or anybody else, Beyonce, or whoever. Just, they want us to like someone. They want us to follow them. They want us to follow their own trends. They want us to follow the trends of these influencers by looking at them, wearing what they wear, dressing the way they dress up, follow what they follow, so that the corporate world benefits out of it. They make the money out of it. They make the profit out of this. And the more profit they make, the more power they have in their hands. The more profiling they do for the population, the more profiling they do for people, the more power and more profit they have in their hands. Let's take a quick break, come back in some time, and discuss it further about why the predictability gives more power in the hands of the corporate world and the political world.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We were talking about Milgram's experiment and how the corporate world uses it. And we were talking about the level of predictability that is in the hands of the corporate world and the political world based on all the information that we upload at the various social media websites. And this predictability allows them to control our free will. Now, what would happen if we are unpredictable? Imagine that there's a huge population or a group of people who are absolutely unpredictable. When a group of people are unpredictable, then it becomes extremely difficult for the corporate world and the political world to manage them, to control them, to guide them, to lead them to a particular place. Why? Because they are unpredictable. You don't know how they would behave and how they would react in a particular environment, in a particular scenario. And this is what is their biggest fear: a population, a set of population that is unpredictable. And that's why all the strategy, all this planning, all this expenditure, all this millions of dollars that are being spent is to understand the human behavior and make it as predictable as possible. When the human behavior is predictable and it is in favor of them, then it is in their benefit and they can sit back and relax. But imagine human behavior is absolutely unpredictable. That is the biggest fear. But imagine another segment where the human behavior is predictable, but it is not in their favor. In this scenario as well, they find it problematic. For example, take Muslims. Muslims are predictable. They know that Muslims follow Islam. They follow the Holy Quran. They know that Muslims think of alcohol as haram. They think of a set of meat that are haram. They are in favor of hijab and all the other rulings of Islam. So they know that this is how the Muslims behave. But this is not in favor of the corporate and the political world. So this is again a problem for them. And they want this to be not just predictable, but in favor of them. So that when it's in their favor, it's easy for them to manage. However, Muslims, they, according to Islam, we should submit to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and not to anybody else. And this is a problem for them. They want people to obey them. And that is why this whole this whole effort that is being put in to control the mass, to make it predictable, to profile them, to categorize them so that it becomes easy for them to manage the masses and lead them in a particular way. And there are no surprises for them. If the masses are unpredictable, then every day is a new surprise. You never know how people are going to behave. But if the masses are predictable, if the free will is under control, if you've already conditioned their subconscious mind, and you know that with a single external stimuli, with a single external message, you can manipulate their behavior, you can manipulate their choices, you can manipulate their decisions, then it becomes much, much more easier for people to behave in a particular way. Remember the message from George W. Bush after the 9/11 incident and after the invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq. He asked the Americans to go and live their life normally, go shopping and spend money, right? So this is again an authoritative figure asking people to live normally and spend money so that the corporates can benefit, so that the political world can benefit. And again, one of the findings of Milgram's experiment is that when an authoritative figure asks you to do something, you blindly follow and obey it because it is required for you to do so. Inshallah, we will continue in the next episode. Until then, fi amanillah. God bless you all.
اللهم صل على محمد وآله اللهم صل على محمد وآله اللهم صل على محمد وآله اللهم صل على محمد وآله
Cultural news. Social news. Scientific news. Artistic news. With the light.
A huge pink moon has glowed over Chilean skies, mesmerizing stargazers and ordinary citizens alike. The full moon was completely visible over the capital, Santiago. The celestial phenomenon is called a pink moon as it appears in April and is named after an American plant, pink plot, that blooms in spring. The pink moon will shine during the weekend through early Monday and may be visible in most parts of the world. The phenomenon also marks the calendar for different religious festivities around the globe. Magic returns to Belgium with a purple carpet of bluebells covering the undergrowth of Hallerbos woods near Brussels. Each spring, this beech forest turns into a bluebell spectacular, turning the area into a natural wonderland. Millions of these blooming flowers sprout up across the 550-hectare woods, filling the air with their sweet aroma. The short but enchanting blooming phase offers nature enthusiasts a one-of-a-kind experience.
It is an outstanding and magical place because whenever we come, there's an amazing atmosphere. The sunrise was truly beautiful this morning, and we know this offers the opportunity to take great photos and decorate our house. It is a great comfort during these tough times.
Visitors can stroll the winding paths and watch rabbits and deer wandering through the woods. The forest floor blooms for a period of 7 to 10 days. After this time, leaves begin to grow on the trees above them, blocking the sunlight from reaching the flowers. The phenomenon of bluebell forest is not uncommon in Europe, but the Hallerbos greenery is unique for the density and beauty of its blossoms.
A batch of autonomous delivery vehicles has been provided to facilitate personnel and volunteers in the streets and communities of Shanghai. The self-driving vehicles distribute supplies to residents in the Chinese megacity, which is now hit hard by the Omicron variant of the coronavirus. The vehicles reduce person-to-person contact and largely lower the risk of infection. A community served by the distribution station has more than 30 apartment buildings and nearly 3,000 residents. The weight of each order is more than 5 kilograms, which puts great pressure on the volunteers to deliver. 49 autonomous delivery vehicles have been sent to communities, colleges, and hospitals in Shanghai to support anti-pandemic and supply work. Sunny skies and spring temperatures made for the perfect setting for the 65th birthday of Fatu, the world's oldest gorilla living at Berlin Zoo. At this age, the Western Lowland gorilla is what Berlin Zoo calls almost something of a legend. Gorillas living in the wild have a life expectancy of about 40 years, and at 65, she has been the world's oldest living gorilla for a while. 65 is absolutely extraordinary, and that obviously needs to be celebrated in style.
They mainly get vegetables, and the sugar they receive at most is fruit sugar, and that's what we should suffer today in the shape of raspberries and blueberries. They were the decoration on rice cake made of boiled rice, a thin layer of rice and some curd so it sticks together. The bottom was made of a lot of green stuff, then the lion and lettuce.
According to Berlin Zoo, Western Lowland gorillas are now an endangered species after their natural habitat was continuously decimated, and therefore fewer and fewer animals live in the tropical rainforest of Cameroon, the Central African Republic, Gabon, and the Republic of Congo. World of Opera is opening its doors to the deaf community for the very first time. The Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra has teamed up with the Deaf West Theater to stage a production of Beethoven's only opera, Fidelio, at their home at the Walt Disney Hall. The chorus will be performed by the White Hands Choir, a group from Venezuela consisting of disabled children and young adults who sing as well as sign. The production pairs up a singer and a deaf actor to both inhabit the one role on stage. Having deaf actors perform alongside opera singers, however, has its challenges, not least of which is keeping up the rhythm of the music.
I think probably that there's a lot of tempo that I've been rehearsing. A lot of times when the singers hold the same word, but the next time they say that exact same word in the next few bars, they don't hold it as long. So trying to remember all of those is very difficult. So are they holding this for four beats or two beats? Or what word is this in this thing?
I feel like the challenge with opera is that it's very fluid and it's not repetitive. The tempos change throughout it, and night to night it even changes. The conductor, you know, kind of changes how he conducts things each night, and so that is something that is challenging.
The opera singers also give small cues to the actors, like opening a letter or sitting down or standing up, to keep them informed where they are in the piece. The deaf cast use theatrical ASL, or American Sign Language, in the production. DJ Kurse, the producer at the Deaf West Theater, says the performance is a little bit more poetic and a little bit more kind of picturesque.
A startup in the U.S. state of California is turning science fiction into reality by sending tiny robots on a fantastic voyage inside humans to treat brain disorders. The smart cells are small enough to be injected and can be carefully guided through the brain using magnetic coils placed outside of the patient's skull. The coils are linked to a computer that can remotely maneuver the robots through delicate pathways into the affected part of the brain. The micro-robots are also removed by rewinding them through the same route. The developers at Bionaut Labs say these robots are extremely important when it comes to zero-failure-sensitive surgeries.
For localized conditions such as cancer tumors, stroke, atherosclerotic plaque buildup, localized pain, and many other conditions, there is a real need to have a micro-robotic, precise, remote-controlled mechanism that can treat a condition only at a specific point and nowhere else.
The startup has already tested the robots on large animals. Inventors hope to use the robot to pierce fluid-filled cysts within the brain when clinical trials on humans begin in 2 years. If approved, they could offer key advantages over more invasive and dangerous treatments for brain disorders.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Floating solar panels help landowners benefit from underused body of water. Now, a German company is covering 14,000 square meters of a lake with these panels, turning it into the biggest solar park in the country. The park is built by a family-owned company called Quartzwerk, which specializes in extracting and processing industrial minerals. The company says it wants to become independent of fossil energy sources amid rising energy prices. The head of the Floating Panel Corporation says they will be generating around 3 million kilowatts per hour of green electricity on the surfaces of Limmersheim Lake in southern Germany.
The plant can make a super big contribution to the land-neutral energy transition, because here an unused lake that was previously used for gravel extraction is being converted into a power plant for renewable energy.
Installation and maintenance of the panels are easy and safe, while they also offer a significant reduction in evaporation from the water surface. According to the company, this will save around 1,100 tons of carbon dioxide each year.
A restaurant in the Indonesian capital of Jakarta is taking fine dining to new heights, literally and figuratively, by giving diners a one-of-a-kind experience 50 meters above ground. The restaurant is called Lounge in the Sky. Diners are securely strapped into seats fixed to a table and are hoisted into the air using a heavy-duty lift. First, the gourmet meals are prepared in the main kitchen. Then, the food is loaded onto the platform where the dishes are plated and served to the patrons. The suspended guests are able to take advantage of breathtaking views as they gently rotate at great heights.
At first, it was not easy. I was nervous that I wouldn't be able to swallow the food, let alone drink. But after some time, I could eventually eat. It was thrilling.
While enjoying the meals, the guests use seat belts and the accompanying staff are equipped with safety harnesses. The guests are also briefed on safety regulations before the platform is raised. Diners call the one-hour experience exhilarating and worth the high price. The project developers say the restaurant was aimed at reviving local and international tourism sector after a big slump during the COVID-19 pandemic. The culinary experience is a first in Indonesia and the third in the world after Belgium and Malaysia.
South Koreans are getting outside to enjoy the open air with a local cherry blossom festival in central Seoul. This is while the country has been dealing with an ongoing surge of the Omicron variant of COVID-19. With some performances and the beauty of spring, many people look forward to turning the corner on the pandemic. Frank Smith has a story.
Spring has come to South Korea, and the cherry blossoms are blooming. COVID-19 restrictions on gatherings are finally being eased, and at Ansan Park in central Seoul, a small festival is bringing everyone back out.
I first came here with my friends 4 years ago, but we couldn't come for the past 2 years because of COVID. I was impressed to see so many people no longer being overly careful about COVID, and we're also very happy to be able to attend festivals like this one.
South Koreans have been quite diligent in observing social distancing guidelines and wearing masks. The Omicron variant of COVID-19 has been quite severe here, with cases only recently declining below 200,000 per day. Still, the government's decided to open up. From the open-air stage, Noh Ah Ram and his band entertain a crowd that's anxious to finally get outside and enjoy group activities.
Ever since COVID, and particularly for the entirety of 2021, when the pandemic was at its peak, I have been unable to perform. I felt today was a restart. Spring has come, the weather's great, the blossoms beautiful, and I felt all of this was celebrating today's show.
South Korea's vaccination rate is nearly 90%, with children now getting the jab.
At first, I was very scared of COVID as I felt it was life-threatening. But now I feel okay with it because I consider it an experience and a certain reality. Also, I worry less because of the vaccines and the new medications.
The cherry blossoms blooming has been tracked from Jeju Island in the south and up to the capital as warm weather moved north. And with this change in seasons, attitudes toward life with COVID are changing as well. Frank Smith, Seoul.
The The first all-private space crew has successfully docked at the International Space Station after spending over 20 hours en route. Three paying customers and a former NASA astronaut will spend 10 days aboard the ISS. The tourists will participate in scientific research, including stem cell experiments and exploring how the body ages in space. The civilian crew were launched into space in a SpaceX rocket from the Kennedy Space Center on Friday. The trip was brokered by Axiom Space, which is the U.S.-based startup that coordinates rocket rides and provides necessary training. It's not the first time paying customers have visited the ISS. Russia sold seats on its Soyuz spacecraft last year. But this is the first mission that includes a crew entirely comprised of civilians.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish. The West insists on giving Kiev weapons, even though it knows this measure will not help bring peace back to Ukraine. Increasingly, Western leaders contribute to the destabilization of Eastern Europe by promoting the continuation of conflict through supplying weapons to the Ukrainian armed forces and neo-Nazi militias. Dear listeners, we now present you an article in this regard, written by Lucas LeRose, a researcher in social sciences and geopolitical consultant. The piece is titled, Giving Weapons to Ukraine Endangers Global Peace. Please stay with us. The end of Ukraine's conflict depends exclusively on Zelensky's acceptance of Moscow's demands. Without it, Russian special military operation will continue. And of course, the more Zelensky receives weapons from the West, the more he will continue to try to push the conflict forward, leading to the suffering of millions of Ukrainian citizens who took forward to peace. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen and EU High Representative for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy Joseph Borrell traveled to Ukraine on April 8 to meet with President Volodymyr Zelensky and other Ukrainian authorities. Some important topics related to the conflict were raised during the conversations, such as the issue of fifth package of sanctions against Russia prepared by the European bloc, which, according to the European Commission's proposal, includes an embargo on Russian coal in addition to possible